You're listening to Beyond the Ribbon, a podcast of the Cancer Survivorship Center, powered by 24 Hours in the Canyon. This podcast is brought to you by Auto Inc. Auto Inc. is a distinguished family of dealerships redefining automotive excellence. Be sure to check out their website at autoinc.com.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Beyond the Ribbon. My name is Ryan Parnell, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and oncology nurse, Pam McMillan.
Hey, Ryan. How are you today?
I am good, Pam. I'm excited for today's episode.
Yes, you know, I came in this morning and I said, hey, how are you today? And what was the first thing that you said to me?
I know. I said, I'm tired. My dog woke me up last night at like 2 a.m.
Right. Can you imagine going through treatment for cancer and having this tiredness, this fatigue? You can't explain. Naps doesn't fix it.
It just doesn't make sense.
No. So I'm excited about our guests too today to learn more about cancer-related fatigue and tiredness. How about you?
I am too. I am. You know, we've talked on several occasions with a lot of our survivors and that have issues with sleeping. And, you know, I know you get a lot of questions about that during your meetings with survivors when you go over their cancer treatment summary and their survivorship care plan. So this is going to be a great episode, you guys that are listening, to help explain why you're fatigued and tired, and maybe be able to explain to your loved ones that a nap may not just fix it. Right, Pam?
That's right.
Sometimes I know I've heard someone say, well, just go take a nap or go lay down. But no, in all seriousness, this is a good episode for you guys to be able to share with folks to explain maybe some symptoms that you're having. And we're very, very lucky to have someone joining us today, Pam, that is in an area and works with folks on this, but also has some personal experience. And I know that we'll get into that. So we're very lucky and fortunate to have Dr. Anthony Perry. He's a native of Philadelphia. Dr. Perry graduated from medical school at the Medical College of Pennsylvania. And prior to joining City of Hope in 2007, Dr. Perry practiced both outpatient and inpatient hospital medicine for 9 years, serving the community of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. And at the City of Hope, he is the new patient intake physician. He also helped set up their survivorship program. And Dr. Perry is also a Hodgkin's lymphoma survivor. Dr. Perry, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yes, thank you for the introduction, and I'll just get right into it about my own experiences. You know, my expertise is in survivorship, but it's one that's personal to me. So as you've pointed out, I was a internal medicine physician, didn't really do a lot with oncology for the first 9 years of my career, had made a decision to kind of transition out of that primary care job. And about 3 weeks before I was ready to start the new job, I felt a lymph node above my collarbone and happened to be rounding that day and saw a friend who's an oncologist and went up to him and showed him the lymph node, and he felt it. And of course, one thing led to another, and I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so here I was ready to start at a cancer center as a physician, and yet I was diagnosed 3 weeks before with Hodgkin's lymphoma. And so pretty ironic, that's for sure. But it's one of the things that drove me to have interest in survivorship, because you always ask the questions, well, what are the things that I have some control over? What can I do to help not only feel better, but maybe perhaps, you know, reduce my chances of cancer recurrence? And so I was very fortunate and blessed. I went through chemotherapy for 4 months. I had a month of radiation. And then shortly thereafterwards, started as a hospitalist at the cancer center, taking care of hospitalized patients. And what I noticed was that the fatigue that I had expected during treatment, and I had, lingered on. And it lingered on for quite some time, probably about 18 months after I was completed treatment, I had significant fatigue. And so when we talk about cancer-related fatigue, just as you've pointed out, taking a nap just doesn't fix it. You know, and there's a whole host of reasons that we'll get into of why that's the case. But of course, when you've gone through treatment, the emotional piece of things obviously enter your head. You know, why aren't I feeling better? Shouldn't I be feeling better by now? Does this mean that the cancer's not gone? These are all questions that we all ask ourselves when we have symptoms. I think, many of these things often lead to feeling of anxiety or depression. And for me, I know from a personal standpoint, I took advantage of mental health services to really help remedy that. So I went through a course of cognitive behavioral therapy with a therapist to try to reduce some of the anxiety that I was feeling, especially going to see the doctor for follow-up visits or getting scans done. But it's one of the things that, even though I started out as a hospitalist at the cancer center, kind of transitioned to the role in which I am right now, which is I see a lot of the patients up front before they've come to the cancer center and set up what testing they need, who they need to see. And then I also saw patients to take care of their medical issues and develop the survivorship program. So it really is something near and dear to my heart, and look forward to talking to you more about that.
Absolutely. So you said with your cancer-related fatigue, it lasted up to almost 18 months after your treatment finished.
That's correct. And that's a common occurrence. If you look at the Armstrong survey that they did, Armstrong survey was a survey of cancer survivors to take a look at the most common symptoms that patients feel after treatment. And the statistics show about 50% of patients with cancer have significant cancer-related fatigue, and that can linger on literally for years. Now, there's a multitude of reasons why that may be the case, some of which can be related to the cancer treatment that you've received, but there's a whole host of other things to kind of consider, which, I look forward to talking with you about.
So whenever you talk about fatigue, how does it differ from just being tired?
So I think all of us, experience tiredness, from time to time in our life, and that may be related to life events going on, working too much, not having good sleep habits. I think, but usually those things that if you have a sleep debt, which is what we call a person who chronically does not reach those deep stages of sleep, that once you repay the debt, and maybe modify your lifestyle by exercise and other things, that usually resolves the problem. Whereas with cancer-related fatigue, that doesn't always work. And there may be more underlying reasons other than what we've talked about for the average person, that you need to really look into.
So for our listeners saying, yeah, I have fatigue, what should they do about it?
So first of all, when you see your doctor, so I'll step back for a second and say that years ago, there was a paper that came out called Lost in Transition. And the Institute of Medicine came out, and I guess it was in the mid-2000s. And what they recognized was that often what happened for patients who were receiving cancer care is that they would kind of cling to their oncologist. And of course, that's natural. You feel a connection, you feel trust in the person that's treating you, hopefully. But their expertise was in getting rid of the cancer. And yet, once you were done cancer treatment, the paradigm was, or the thought was, hey, you're done your treatment, you're hopefully cured, and that's great. So, wonderful. I'll send you on your way.
Go
But
forth.
go forward. That's right. And go back to your primary care physician eventually. And the, where the primary care physician situated is, they knew how to take care of some of the medical issues, but they weren't really educated about some of the cancer-related issues that occur commonly in patients who have received treatment. And so there was a gap. And what they talked about in Lost in Transition was the role of where survivorship can bridge that gap, where you have people who are specialized that know quite a bit about the cancer treatments and the effects, late and long-term effects of the cancer treatments and the things that people deal with, and yet they can look forward in a preventative way that helps dovetail with what a primary care doctor should do, which is, doing things from a lifestyle standpoint, that promote healthy behaviors, prevent disease, and hopefully identifying things early on that can be modified so that people do well, moving forward. So, and that's where survivorship really came out of things. And so I guess the short answer to your question is that typically most centers have a survivorship program. And so after someone has completed their primary treatment, or even if they're during treatment, these are issues that they should bring up to their oncologist. If they have a primary care doctor who has any expertise in survivorship, but they can always talk to their primary care doctor. But there are specially trained people that that offer survivorship services that kind of bridge that gap. So the first step is to really talk to your doctor about that, especially if they're survivorship trained. Typically what happens is that there's a screening tool to kind of identify the severity of the fatigue. And then once it's determined that the fatigue is either moderate or severe, then there's kind of some evaluation that could move forward, that should move forward.
You know, that's great. That's obviously a super good point. Is, and I know, Pam, we do a lot of, you need to go back and talk to your doctor. You need to make a phone call and speak to your nurse. You know, I want everyone to know that at our survivorship program, we don't treat, your cancer. We don't treat, in this case, your fatigue. We come alongside your physician. So I think that's a very good point Dr. Perry made right there, right off the bat, is when you talk to your doctor, you need to be bringing that up. And I know that Pam is super good at saying, yeah, this is something that you need to bring up to your physician.
You know, it's one thing to have a side effect, but I know that oftentimes whenever I talk to survivors, they feel guilty for bringing up these side effects because ultimately they're cured from their cancer, but they have these other side effects. So don't be afraid to advocate for yourself and talk to your doctors.
Absolutely. So, when we evaluate fatigue in patients who have received cancer treatment, there's certain things that should be looked at. So the two most common reasons why a person has fatigue that lingers on is mental health issues like anxiety and depression. So that's, so an anxiety or depression screen should be offered. As I pointed out, I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky person, but I think having cancer definitely was probably was the most stressful thing in my life that I've experienced. I'm 55 years old, and I've never come close to anything more stressful than that. You plan your life. You go to school. You get a job. You have a family and kids. So you have your life kind of planned out. And then suddenly you're faced with a diagnosis that, kind of stands in the way of planning future events. And that's really stressful and disconcerting. So for me, making sure that I got that mental health help was critical in me moving forward and having a markedly improved quality of life.
Let me interrupt you for a second, Dr. Perry. I want to point out something to our listeners that you just said. Pam, we're speaking to an internal medicine physician who says going through cancer treatment was the most stressful thing in his entire life, even more so than medical school, correct, Dr. Perry?
Medical school was a piece of cake next to getting.
Now, my point with this is you guys listening, do not downplay the fact that you went through cancer. It is important, as we've said, talk to your doctor, as we're about to discuss about mental health, and we're going to talk about that. It is important when you hear a physician and who says medical school is a piece of cake compared to going through treatment. I think that is a very vital piece of information that should ring bells within your head. Would you agree, Pam?
Yes. I can't imagine the stress that medical school brings on, and then him to say cancer is even more stressful. It's important that we take care of ourselves and the mental health while going through treatment and even after treatment.
Yes. So Dr. Perry, I apologize to interrupt, but I just wanted to make a strong point of that. But you were saying about mental health and what you went through.
Absolutely. And for me, cancer treatment, I was very blessed and fortunate. And so, the 4 months that I had chemotherapy, I felt generally pretty well, but pretty tired at times. I was able to work through some of it, through most of it, actually. I would take off typically 2 days out of every 2 weeks to get the treatment, and the day, typically the day afterwards, I would be off. I coached my daughter's softball team, so I was able to do things, even though that there were times that I didn't feel well. But to me, the part that was most disconcerting was afterwards. And just as you've pointed out, Pam, survivor's guilt is real. You've done the treatment. For me, Hodgkin's lymphoma had a survival rate of 90%, so I knew my chances were good. But you always think in the back of your mind, what if I'm not in that 90%? I had 3 young children at the time, so there's so many other factors. There's the financial aspect of things. If I cannot work, how are we going to pay the bills? So there's so many stressors that really go on to someone who's going through cancer treatment. So definitely addressing the mental side of things is important. The second most common reason why a person has significant fatigue is that they may have a sleep disorder. And so we always sleep screen people for a sleep disorder. And so typically the most common sleep disorders are sleep apnea. Many people have insomnia related to periodic limb movements. And so again, going through some of the screening tools is important. So, for instance, there's a tool called Stop Bang. It's an acronym. And what it estimates are the risk factors for sleep apnea. And if you have a certain number of these risk factors, then typically then you may warrant a sleep study to be done. And so during a sleep study, it can identify not only if you have sleep apnea, which the main kind of symptom that people who have sleep apnea would be fatigue and is highly treatable. But even things like restless leg syndrome, periodic limb movements of sleep, all these things affect the deep sleep that is restorative to how you feel. So those are the two most common reasons why people feel fatigue. And so, of course, there are a number of other things that medically are important to make sure are not playing a role. So, friend, and so I want to pause for a moment to let you speak.
If so, oftentimes whenever I meet with especially the female that have gone through breast cancer, they talk about their sleep patterns and how terrible their sleep can be. How much does hormones play in our sleep?
Well, I think any menopausal or perimenopausal women will tell you that they experience those difficulties with sleep. I think that's pretty universal. And as you've pointed out, many women who especially who have received treatment for breast cancer, they're on medications that often block estrogen, and they can cause a whole host of problems, including increased anxiety, joint pain, vasomotor symptoms, meaning, hot flashes or night sweats. So all these things absolutely impact sleep architecture and restorative sleep that helps you feel better. But the good news is there's medications and things that can be done these days to help.
Right.
So obviously, a woman who has hormone positive breast cancer, you don't want to give them estrogen in the form of a patch or a pill. That's not going to be part of the recommendation. But there are a number of other things that potentially can be useful. So, for instance, today, commonly, there are newer medications that work in a different way that we used to that now are advertised on TV. But most commonly, we use drugs like venlafaxine, which is an antidepressant that is a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor. We believe that many of the hot flashes are caused or mediated by serotonin. And so these drugs have been shown to cut hot flashes and night sweats by about 50%. There's a whole host of other things too. So in the San Antonio Breast Cancer Conference a few years back, what they found was that a study showed benefit for a bladder medication called oxybutynin. And so So sometimes we'll recommend that to patients. And then there's a whole host of other things that potentially could be utilized. But of course, we also talk to people about sleep hygiene. So sleep hygiene means, you know, setting the habits so that people can be successful in getting to sleep. So my wife always laughs at me because I talk about this. So one of the biggest things that we had to kind of get used to when we got married 30 years ago was that she likes to sleep with the television on and I like pitch black.
Yeah.
but what we know is that if you, so there's a couple types of insomnia that we deal with. So people can have a difficult time falling asleep, or they may wake up in the middle of the night and can't fall back asleep, or some people have both. And so when you're trying to initiate sleep, there should be no electronics. So no phone, no television on. The room should be dark. It should be cool. There may be some benefit of putting some lavender scent in the room. If you exercise earlier in the day, that may be helpful. Eating a small snack close to bedtime may be helpful. You don't want to get a large, snack. But if you cannot fall asleep within 10 minutes, you need to get out of bed. And what I suggest to people is go to a different room, do something busy, like fold wash, balance your checkbook, do something for 10, 15, 20 minutes, and then go back to bed. What I tell my patients is there's only two things you should do in bed, sleep and sex. That's it. And so you should condition your body so that when you go to sleep in your bed that you fall asleep. And the same applies if you wake up in the middle of the night. If you wake up in the middle of the night and you cannot fall asleep in 10 seconds or in 10 minutes, you need to get out of the room and you need to do something busy without putting the television on, without reading in bed. So these are what we call sleep hygiene rules. So that's the first piece. And that's really part of the solution. The most effective way to treat insomnia is through what's called cognitive behavioral therapy. So that's transitioning your mind and doing mental exercises that help prepare you to be able to rest. My wife always laughs because I always say that I'm a light switch. You turn off the light switch and I'm out.
Yeah.
You turn on and I'm on and I'm up. For her, things are a lot more complex. It's almost like the Christmas tree lights being tangled and you have to kind of, navigate you through the wiring.
Yes. But,
and so many times people ruminate and think about a million different things while they're lying in bed. That's why you need to get out of bed and, kind of address some of those things if you have to. Write it down on a list. When you get back into bed, you need to leave those alone. And I know it's easy for me to say, but that's part of it. And cognitive behavioral therapy gives you a bit of those tools to help remedy that. We try to avoid medication for sleep. Certainly exercise is part of survivorship and helping fatigue as well. And so what I recommend to all of my patients is that they should be exercising aerobic activity at least 30 minutes, 5 days a week. So there's the magic number is 150 minutes a week. There's pretty good data that if you look at recurrence curves as far as cancer is concerned, that if you can get to 150 minutes a week of exercise, your risk of your cancer coming back is actually substantially less.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. And that's certainly with some of the other, issues with medications like the drugs that are used to block estrogen, bone loss is an issue potentially. And so we recommend also weightlifting for at least 10, 15, 20 minutes, at least twice a week. So you can hopefully maintain your bone mass in addition to taking in 1,000 milligrams of calcium a day through your diet preferentially and enough vitamin D3, which at least needs to be 800 international units a day. So those are the things that you can do to kind of help bone health. So those are the two main things that we focus on, sleep and the issue with potentially sleep apnea and also the mental health part of things, anxiety.
I hesitate to even say this, Pam. You brought up that I did say that I was tired last night. When my dog woke me up, I have to tell you what I did. I did try to go back to sleep, didn't work. So what did I do? I turned on the TV. I turned on the TV. I, however, fell asleep to the TV, re-woke up, right, and had to turn the TV off. I know that was bad, but I'm telling on myself. It's very interesting, Dr. Perry, that in this case, right, there's no simplistic thing like, oh, just give me an Ambien and I'll be good to go. It takes a little bit of diagnostic evaluation, if you will, and a little bit of work on the survivor's part, correct?
Absolutely. And, we would don't want to cover things up from a purely pharmacologic standpoint by throwing a pill at everything. These medications, while they're useful in certain circumstances, unfortunately have some long and late term effects. How many times do we see that people are reliant on drugs like Ambien and they may get what's called a parasomnia? So we see kind of unusual things like sleepwalking and, and the like. So that's not necessarily the direction that we go to first by any means. And there's a whole host of other things that when a person has fatigue after they've gone through treatment. So for instance, people can develop iron deficiency or be anemic. And so it's important for your doctor to check to make sure that your iron levels, your ferritin levels are okay, which is the storage form of iron, that you're not anemic. In addition, many of the treatments affect hormonal levels, as you pointed out. Certainly, testosterone can be affected by some of the treatments. We also want to make sure that there's no cardiac dysfunction. So, one of the drugs that I received, which was Adriamycin or doxorubicin, it's often used in women who have had breast cancer. It can have effects on the heart. So, about 1 out of 20 people can have an effect on their heart long term. What we know is that the heart's a pump. So it normally pumps out, about 50 to 55% of the blood that goes into it should be pumped out. But these drugs can drop that level. And so as they drop to 45, 40, 35%, some people experience that in the form of fatigue. And so one of the things that generally I will check is a simple ultrasound of the heart called an echocardiogram, especially in patients who have received those drugs that could have an effect on the heart. So that's important to kind of take a look at. You want to make sure that a person's not having any substance abuse with alcohol or drug use. You want to review their medication list. So there's a whole host of medications that potentially can cause fatigue, like beta blockers that are often used for hypertension. We want to make sure that they don't have any chronic infections. So that's certainly something that can be adjusted or looked at. So those are most of the things that we really look at when evaluating if there's an underlying medical reason for fatigue. And so once we've kind of gone through all of that, and if we've identified a specific cause, obviously we want to get at the underlying problem. If we've not gotten to that, regardless, the first line treatment for cancer-related fatigue is to exercise. And I know people feel tired and they don't feel like exercising, but it's ironically the thing that works the best with the least side effects. And so
How much does nutrition play a role in fatigue?
I mean, I think that, generally speaking, it plays some role. I don't know that we know exactly the specifics of what role it plays in fatigue. Certainly, we want to make sure that a person doesn't have vitamin deficiencies like B12 and folate deficiencies through this that can affect blood levels. But generally speaking, there's one diet that really has been shown not only to prevent cancer, to be beneficial for cancer survivors and reduce, cancer recurrence, and that's the Mediterranean diet. So, of course, the most important thing that I talk to people regarding diet is to adhere to a diet that's rich in fruits and vegetables, lean meats like chicken and fish. You should limit your red meat intake to about 10 ounces a week. And then whole grains and nuts and seeds are perfectly fine and should be utilized. What people should avoid is the super refined, super processed, simple sugars, cakes, pies, candy, sweets, those things, because they have no nutritional value and don't provide that backbone that you need for maintenance of muscle mass. You know, there's a lot of recent literature that shows that, you know, when you look at longevity, the most important factor for longevity is frailty or muscle mass. So, and as we get older, unfortunately, we start to lose some of that. So it goes back to the fact that aerobic activity and weightlifting are an important component of survivorship.
It's interesting, Pam. We talk about this often here at the Survivorship Center. You know, we have somewhere between 70 and 80 classes a month of programs and activities. Many of those are centered around what Dr. Perry just said, exercise in some form, fashion, or another, whether it's non, you know, weight bearing, like a water exercise class, a walk, or if it's like a walking group. But we also have something that he mentioned too, talking about rebuild, like strength and strengthening your muscles. And we have a class called Regaining Your Strength. And that's an important class for specifically for that. And I remember distinctly a survivor coming up and talking to us about a breast cancer survivor after having been through with treatment for a couple of years, that her doctor commented to her after her most recent bone density study that her bone density had improved and she had been gaining that bone mass. And he attributed it to her exercising and being active. And so again, those are those things that we offer that are very, very important that tend to bring themselves up in all of just about every one of our conversations on our podcast, doesn't it, Pam?
You know, it's funny. It's not our ideas that exercise works. It's proven. And so it's important that our survivors take advantage of the classes that we have, you know, try a class. All it's going to cost is your time. Right. Everything that we offer here is free. So look at our calendar, find a class just to start with. And then if you're afraid to come by yourself, bring a caregiver or a friend with you.
That's right.
And that's wonderful, because there's a whole host of things besides a regular exercise routine that can be utilized. And so when you take a look at physical therapy, many of those people, an occupational therapist can give strategies to kind of conserve energy. You know, for example, if you're going out to the food store and then you have to go visit someone else, you kind of want to do it in a way that will conserve your time and energy. So an occupational therapist and physical therapist can be very useful in that circumstance. And then yoga and other modalities that help both mentally and physically can be very effective. For some of those services.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, it's fun for us to be able to say, yep, we got it. You know, so, I know that, and as a physician who started, you know, survivorship and has obviously experienced that, to hear you echo the things that we talk about a lot and the necessity and the different things that we offer, the benefits of those are tremendous. So it means a lot to be able to hear someone else besides us, you know, to validate why we do what we do.
That's wonderful. And then, of course, there are some pharmacologic interventions that we offer. So that's kind of last resort. You know, if a person has very significant fatigue and their quality of life is very impacted by that, you know, there are certain people who have, you know, medical comorbidities that allow us to use things like methylphenidate, which is like Ritalin-like drugs. So there are circumstances which I'll prescribe that to patients, but those are far and few between, only because of what the potential side effects of those drugs are. We try to obviously do things more naturally and with less toxicity or side effects. And so those other modalities have proof behind them, just like you said, Pam. And so we certainly try those things first.
Oftentimes I hear survivors, I don't want another medication, you know, so there are other ways to help with the fatigue. Have we missed anything that you would like to discuss about fatigue?
So, you know, the other thing is that there are some small studies that show a supplement called American ginseng as potentially beneficial for people with cancer-related fatigue. What I tell patients is that though during treatment, you don't want to take it because it does affect some of the enzymes within the liver, which can affect metabolism of the treatment that they're undergoing. So you really want to talk to your doctor before you try anything like that. But in patients who have completed the treatment, you know, American ginseng is one thing that has some studies that may show some benefit, you know. But again, you know, we try not to use medications or supplements. We try to do things more naturally through exercise and the other modalities that we talked about.
That's fantastic.
Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge about this to our listeners. This brings us to our last segment. We are sponsored by the Auto Inc. family. Do you have an Auto Inc. inspiring moment that you would like to share with our listeners?
Sure. So when I got ill, one of the things that my wife did to reduce her stress was to exercise, and she became a runner. She had never run before in her life. She started out and, you know, really ran 50 yards, and that went to a half a mile, that went to a mile, that went to a 5K, and ultimately she ended up running a marathon and qualified for the Boston Marathon. And so along the way, you know, I started to exercise, and I'll never forget. I literally ran 50 feet, was bent over and wheezing, and she thought I was going to have a heart attack right there. But I stayed with it. I persisted. And so I had the hope to raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and joined Team in Training and eventually ran two full marathons myself. And so anybody can do it. So the inspiring moment is that one of my patients had kind of read my story. I had a blog that I had, you know, kind of populated through my journey of the training. And, you know, they were very well aware of what I was doing. And so when they finished their cancer treatment, they started to do the same. And she ended up running a half a marathon, which she would have never have thought of in her entire life. So I think that, you know, people have the ability to inspire all those around them every day. And what I hope is that people hear that you can do it. I'm not an athlete, and neither was my patient, but she ended up running a half a marathon, whereas I don't think she ever exercised in her life. And again, when you take a look at the things that you have control over, you know, exercise is probably the biggest one that you have control over. And even though that you may feel tired, it's one of those things that you need to listen to your body. So when you're exhausted, you stop. Or if you're having symptoms like chest pain or shortness of breath, you stop, you go to your doctor. But you start out slow, even if it's a 5 or 10 or 15 minute walk, and you build yourself up to that 30 minutes, 5 days a week. Anybody can do that. So, but she was very proud of the fact that she was able to kind of get to that. And she told me that her relationships had also benefited. So she became closer to her husband because she was doing things with her husband. They would exercise together. And so it really helped her relationship with her husband. And she felt more fit and more confident with her ability as far as, you know, having quality of life mentally and physically.
Yeah, that is pretty, that's inspirational. I tell you, Pam, we talk about often folks that come through here that, you know, end up walking a 5K, like our colors that we have that our foundation puts on in September, or even jogging and running, that never have run before in their life. But once they had cancer, came to the center, began coming to classes and got involved, that now they're walking and running 5Ks.
Maybe they can ride their bike at the 24 hours.
That should be next. That's right. That's right. Dr. Perry, thank you for joining us and sharing your story but also sharing your expertise and how you benefited from the things that we just talked about.
Of course. No, it was my pleasure to speak with all of you, and I really appreciate the opportunity.
Pam, I think, the homework is kind of taking an inventory, isn't it? They need to take kind of a sleep hygiene, including myself. I just told on myself. So definitely taking a sleep hygiene inventory. And if you're struggling with sleep and you're struggling with fatigue, talk to your doctor. Get involved medically with your physician, re-engage with them. If it's been a bit since you've been to the doctor, you need to reach back out. But also, Pam, we need to challenge them to get involved here.
Yes, it doesn't, like I said, it doesn't cost you anything. It costs you a little bit of your time. And like Dr. Perry said, anybody can do it. Start with 5 minutes, slowly build up, and hopefully that fatigue will go away.
That's right. That's right. Well, thank you guys for joining us today. Take this episode and make sure you maybe re-listen to it. Take some notes. Get involved. Let us know how we can help. And then make sure and join us next time for another great episode of Beyond the Ribbon.
Thanks again for listening to Beyond the Ribbon. We'd like to extend a special thanks to the Auto Inc. family of dealerships as they have supported 24 Hours in the Canyon and the Cancer Survivorship Center since 2016. For more information on the Cancer Survivorship Center, please visit our website, 24survivorship.org.